Welcome to the first Clinical Oncology podcast of 2016. My name is Saif Ahmed. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking to the two authors of an excellent review published last year in our journal, detailing the cardiac side effects of breast cancer radiotherapy. Dr. Carolyn Taylor is a clinical oncologist and research fellow at the Clinical Trial Service Unit in the University of Oxford. Carolyn has devoted much of her research career to this area and published a number of important studies during that time. Her work includes co-authoring a seminal population-based case control study of over 2,000 women receiving breast cancer radiotherapy, published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2013. Dr. Anna Kirby is a clinical oncologist based at the Royal Marsden Hospital, and amongst many things is also the chief investigator of the UK HeartSpare study, a series of three clinical trials which have led heart-sparing breast radiotherapy to become standard of care in many UK hospitals. Today's podcast is also brought to you in conjunction with RadiationNation.com. This is a free-to-access international online community aimed at promoting collaborative conversations in radiation oncology. If that all sounds a little abstract, then check out their website. The initiative has a particularly big following in the US and Australia. Importantly, they have chosen Carolyn and Anna's article for their next Twitter-based journal club, which takes place at 10 p.m. UK time on Sunday, 24th January. The journal club will be led by Dr. Richard Simcock of the Sussex Cancer Centre and will enable oncologists and the like to share their opinions on an international level. It will also give participants the opportunity to directly ask the article's authors any questions they have. Details for how to join this are also available on RadiationNation.com. And now this episode's interview with Dr. Carolyn Taylor and Dr. Anna Kirby on the cardiac side effects of breast cancer radiotherapy. Anna and Carolyn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much indeed.
Carolyn, I'd like to start off by asking you a little bit about what kind of side effects radiotherapy can cause within the heart.
Well, the main side effect of radiotherapy on the heart is ischemic heart disease. So that's myocardial infarction, angina, coronary heart disease. And from a clinical point of view, the type of ischemic heart disease that's caused by radiotherapy appears to be the same as ischemic heart disease that occurs in the general population. So it presents with the same symptoms, you find the same things on imaging, and it's treated in the same way. Now, there are a few studies of women who've had radiotherapy in previous decades that have also shown that in the past, breast cancer radiotherapy has caused valvular heart disease and pericardial disease. But breast cancer radiotherapy has changed substantially since then. And in fact, nowadays in most countries, we wouldn't expect the valves or the pericardium to get much radiation dose. So we wouldn't expect the type of radiotherapy used in most countries for breast cancer to cause any of those side effects now. So the main thing is ischemic heart disease.
And do we know anything about the pathophysiology behind this?
That's a very good question. There are a few studies that help us with this. None of them are very big. So there are case series and case reports that give us information about patients who've developed heart disease after high doses of radiotherapy. And those have shown that radiotherapy can damage the heart muscle. It can also damage the large coronary arteries in the heart. Also, we've got myocardial perfusion studies. So that's an imaging study where women have had breast cancer radiotherapy and then they have imaging months or years later. And those studies suggest that radiotherapy can cause damage to the small blood vessels in the heart muscle. And then also we've got a couple of coronary artery imaging studies. There are only two of these, and they suggest that the parts of the coronary arteries that are in the radiation field are the parts that tend to become damaged after radiotherapy. So all of those three types of studies suggest that it's both the heart muscle and the large coronary arteries that tend to be damaged by radiotherapy.
How common a problem is this?
Well, that's changed, really. The risk from today's radiotherapy are much less than the risks of yesterday's radiotherapy. And that's for two main reasons. So firstly, the risk of ischemic heart disease in the general population in developed countries has reduced substantially over the past few decades. And that's mainly because we're much better at treating it nowadays. But also, doses received by the heart in breast cancer radiotherapy have reduced over the past few decades. And that's particularly true in the UK and in the US. So in the UK, heart dose is around 2 gray in left-sided radiotherapy, and it's less than that in right-sided. And if we combine those doses with a recently published dose-response relationship, we can calculate that for most women, those doses would only result in an absolute risk of radiation-induced heart disease of well under 1%. So that's very reassuring. But that risk does vary. In some countries, heart doses are higher, so the risks will be higher. And I guess the other thing that we oncologists consider is, what are the benefits of the radiotherapy? And so we always tend to weigh up what are the absolute risks versus the benefits. And for most women irradiated in the UK and in the US, the benefits far outweigh the risks. So we can reassure most women who are being considered for breast cancer radiotherapy today.
And in terms of when the ischemic heart disease or other problem may happen after radiotherapy, is there a long latent period?
We don't know the exact period, but we know that there's an excess in the first 5 years. So in relative terms, the excess starts within years 0 to 5, it continues in years 5 to 10, and then it continues on after that. In absolute terms, as women age, they get older, their absolute risk of heart disease increases. So their absolute risk of radiation-induced heart disease increases as they age as well.
In terms of the data out there, and you've presented it very well in your paper, how do we know all this in terms of the models behind the risks of radiotherapy-induced cardiac toxicity, and how reliable is the data we have?
That's a very good question. We've got several dose-response relationships in the literature. The largest one came out in the year 2013 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And it was pretty big. It was a case-control study based on around 1,000 cases of women who had had breast cancer radiotherapy and developed heart disease afterwards. And there were around 1,000 controls. So it had very strong power. And because we had so many events, we didn't need to use modelling in that. And it was basically a comparison of women who'd received lower versus higher radiation doses. And this showed that the relative risk of developing ischemic heart disease increased by 7.4% per gray whole heart dose. And there wasn't a threshold below which there was no risk. And then what we did was we used that 7.4% per gray and we applied it heart disease rates in the general population. And we found that for most women who get breast cancer radiotherapy today with less than 5 gray dose, their absolute risk of developing ischemic heart disease was less than 1%. So actually the risks were lower than we thought they were going to be, but many people worldwide have found that study quite reassuring. And we've just done the same thing in a different data set. So we've got 1,000 deaths from heart disease in randomized data, and we've generated another dose response relationship, again without modeling, and that's consistent with the 7.4% per gray. So I think we can be fairly sure that the risks per gray are approximately correct.
As clinical oncologists, we have the option of outlining the heart, but also coronary vessels such as the left anterior descending artery. In your experience, which of these is the most reliable in terms of predicting cardiac risk?
Well, in our study, we looked at several different measures of dose. I think we looked at about 20 or 30 different measures of dose, and we included doses to the coronary arteries as well as doses to the whole heart. And we found that the best predictor of heart disease was whole heart dose, which is very convenient because that's the organ that's easiest to see on radiotherapy planning scans. So I wouldn't usually outline the LAD coronary artery. I would use whole heart dose. It might be that because they're very difficult to see on CT planning scans and they're very difficult to estimate dose. So I don't think we can be sure about the dose estimates in those previous dose-response relationships for coronary arteries. We can be reasonably sure that we got the mean heart dose correct to within a few gray, but I don't think we can estimate coronary artery doses for women irradiated in previous decades. So it might be that was the reason it wasn't a good predictor of heart disease. But I think the best thing to use in the clinic is mean heart dose.
That's really helpful to know, and I'm sure a lot of trainees will breathe a sigh of relief knowing that.
You can't see it, it's impossible.
And Anna, at this point, I just wanted to bring you in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different techniques described in your paper of how we can prevent the cardiac dose. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yes, of course. So obviously you can do really simple things like just adjusting the beam angles, for example. So it's unlikely to be the case that we need to treat the entirety of breast tissue for every patient. And indeed, the IMPORT LOW study, which looked at partial breast irradiation in comparison with whole breast irradiation, will publish in the first quarter of next year. And obviously we can't guess the data, but we hope that partial breast irradiation may well become a standard of care for a proportion of our patients, and that's a very simple way of keeping your heart dose down. Then, of course, if your patient's got disease in the upper half of the left breast, you can use multi-leaf collimator shielding to keep the heart out of the field. But where a patient's got disease in the central part or the lower part of the breast, then that also risks shielding the tissue that we want to treat. So then you need something perhaps a little bit cleverer. So alternative approaches would include intensity modulated radiotherapy, and I would include in that volumetric modulated arc therapy and other tomotherapy techniques. And that will conform your high dose very nicely to the breast tissue and away from the heart and the LAD. But the problem with that is that you're going to get a bath of lower dose irradiation. So in fact, your mean heart dose may not come down by very much. One other way to deal with it would be to treat women on their front, and that's a very popular technique in parts of the US and Canada. We found it quite challenging for our patients because, firstly, dosimetrically, we've shown that it's most helpful in the larger breasted women, but the larger the breast, often the larger the patient, which means that there can be difficulties setting up the patient. They often roll into the hole, so you can be there for 40 minutes on the machine trying to set the patient up, and that's clearly not feasible, certainly not in the National Health Service. So we sort of really changed tack from our early work with the prone position towards a breath hold technique, which I think is a really simple and elegant solution. And breath hold techniques come in many shapes and sizes. You can either use a machine to assist the patient in maintaining her breath hold, or you can look at the breath hold with gating and turn the machine on only when the patient is in the inspiratory phase. Or you can simply ask a patient to take a breath in and hold it, which will similarly just move the heart backwards and inwards and downwards away from the radiotherapy field. And that's a very simple technique, which we showed in the UK Heart Spare study to be as reproducible as the active breathing controlled solution.
And in terms of some of the techniques you've described, do we know how effective any of these are in reducing the heart dose?
So broadly speaking, any heart-sparing technique will reduce the heart dose by approximately 50 to 60%, something in that ballpark.
So that's clearly very significant.
Well, it depends on what the heart dose was from the baseline technique. So generally speaking, we're prioritising it in those patients who've got disease in the lower part of the breast because they are likely to have more depth of heart within the field, and therefore a 50 to 60% reduction will be more meaningful, say, than for a patient who's got disease in the upper outer quadrant.
And you mentioned in your paper about some patients not having radiotherapy at all after a wide local excision, for instance.
Yes.
any thoughts on that?
Well, interestingly, in the UK, we've got the Prime Time study opening next year. So this is really trying to identify women who are at the very lowest risk of relapse. And it makes that judgment based on a combination of clinical factors and a test called IHC4, which is looking at a combination of receptors and the Ki-67 proliferation index, and trying to identify those women who are at the very lowest risk of relapse. And then it's essentially a registration study. So women who are identified as being what we think at that very low risk of relapse will not receive radiotherapy, but then they'll be monitored, obviously, for local relapse, and the expectation obviously is still that they would continue with endocrine treatment as per standard of care.
And proton therapy is yet to reach the shores of the UK, but is there any role of that?
Yeah, well, it certainly is a very topical area of interest at the moment. And if you look at the dosimetry from proton treatment, it certainly looks as though it has its attractions. And there may be a small group of women in whom it is very helpful. And I'm thinking particularly of patients who've got unusual anatomy. So there are patients, for example, with pectoral rectus excavatum, where even with a breath hold technique, you can't get the heart out of the field. And we've had a couple of patients where even with breath hold, there's still 2 to 3 centimeters heart depth within the field. So for those particular patients, proton therapy would be a very elegant solution. Now, there are other issues about the resource, how much it costs, how long it takes, that all need to be weighed up amongst the panoply of techniques that we have available. But I would anticipate that roll on 5 to 10 years' time, that the majority of patients will be treatable using a very simple technique such as breath hold, but that we'll have a minority of patients who would benefit from proton beam therapy.
And you've already mentioned the PRIMETIME study. Are there other ongoing or future research trials planned to look at this topic?
So in terms of heart sparing studies, we've now extended the heart spare study into the context of locoregional lymph node radiotherapy. So we're currently undertaking a planning study comparing different approaches, so breath hold, arc therapy techniques, and we're also looking at protons within that as well, trying to identify which class solutions might be most suitable. So with the breath hold, we're also looking at wide tangent techniques, because obviously we want to get heart doses down, but we also want techniques that are implementable and usable and are not going to significantly impact on resources. So we'll then go on to do a study comparing our front runner techniques. And obviously here at the Marsden, we don't have the luxury of a proton machine anytime in the near future. So our study will initially be probably comparing wide tangents and arc therapy techniques, with the primary endpoint of linear accelerated time, which is probably the most expensive UK resource at the moment. But we'll also be looking at the acute toxicity of those techniques. And then ultimately, we'd like to do a multi-center study looking at rolling out those front runner techniques alongside a larger randomized control study. But that's very much in the planning stages at the moment.
Anna and Carolyn, thank you very much for such an engaging and informative overview of such an important topic. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed.